Y'all, this is a super rambly episode. A couple of episodes ago, I mentioned Barbara and Alan Pease and their gendered approach to body language, and I promised to do a debunk episode on their books. And since this month is Pride Month, I thought it would be fun to contrast the gendered approach to body language presented in the Pease's book. Well, books. There are so many books, and they're all gendered. Not all. Many of them are gendered. I thought it would be fun to kind of juxtapose that with the body language observations from the current season of Queer Eye, which was recommended to me by one of my clients. I know that gendered body language is a myth, but contrasting the concept of gendered body language with the movement of the Fab Five in Queer Eye could make a really great visual illustration. Gender is a construct and gendered body language is a myth, but Barbara and Alan Pease present other views in their books. I'm sure they are coming from a place of wanting to help people, and I can't even imagine how much work goes into writing multiple books. So I really appreciate their viewpoint and their work, but I'm here to present another way of thinking. So long story short, a couple days ago, in preparation for this episode, I say a couple days ago, but I have like lingered on this episode for a while. So this is actually a couple of weeks ago. In preparation for this episode, I sat down with my coffee and my dog and my notebook and a couple of highlighters and a stack of post-its, and I started to read the definitive guide to body language, and right out of the gate, there were no citations. Bibliography? Yes. Citations? Sadly, no. My heart just sank. Here I am, very comfortable, totally ready to like spend hours reading and researching. This is the moment. And if you live with other humans, you know exactly what I'm talking about. All the kids are still asleep. The house is quiet. My dog is snuggling on my lap. I have fresh coffee. And I'm looking at this book thinking, oh my God, I can't read this. I don't have it, guys. It's been a rough month for me emotionally, and I'm not going to torture myself with body language conjecture. Which leaves me with Queer Eye. Speaking of which, I went to my very first Pride Festival last weekend, and it was phenomenal. I didn't realize that there's even a flag for allies, and like, of course there's a flag for allies. This whole movement is centered around inclusivity. And so even though I'm one of the straights, I feel included. And actually this is probably a good spot to pause and apologize. I told you this episode was going to be rambly. I was raised by very loving parents in a Christian household. And then when I moved away to college, I found myself involved in a very controlling church with pretty extreme and hurtful views on the LGBTQIA plus community. And I remained in that community for over 15 years. I held on to a conservative viewpoint for really so much longer than I care to admit. And in that time, I am sure that I have alienated people in the LGBTQIA plus community. I have misgendered people. I have pushed a belief system that has harmed others, and I have said hurtful things. If you were on the receiving end of my idiocy and closed-mindedness, please accept my deepest apologies. There's no excuse for my ignorance. And all I had to do was actually read the Bible and check what the leadership was preaching instead of following blindly. And it took me way too long to get there. It took me way too long to get to where I am now. And I'm so sorry for the hurt that I caused along the way. I will try every day to be a better human. Okay. Now back to the Pride Festival. Going to the Pride Festival was an eye-opening experience for me. The festival was a place of love and inclusivity and acceptance, which is what I thought church was supposed to be, but it wasn't really. Church is all about conforming. And I can honestly say that I never once walked into or out of a church service truly loving myself. And I have never felt more comfortable in my body or more comfortable as a human than I did at the Pride Festival. What's really interesting to me, and if you used to go to church with me and you're listening right now, just think about this. Jesus preached love above all else. The people in the Pride community actually embody what Jesus taught. Many, many supposed Christian communities have lost sight of that. So if it's truly what you want to be more Christ-like, perhaps it's time to rethink some things. Okay, I am done talking about church. Apologies if I traumatized anyone besides myself. Going all the way back to now, Queer Eye. With the Pieces book out of the running, I decided just to focus on Queer Eye and see what might like jump out at me that I could bring into an episode for you. And y'all, there's so much. What I really think though is going to be the most fun thing to see is the interaction between the hosts and the guests. Most of this is seen in combinations of effort and shape. So that's what I'd like to encourage you to look for, but there are elements of body and space too. There's lots to observe, and the way makeover shows are filmed is kind of designed to show you the impact the hosts have on the guest. So the interactions are highlighted and it's just really easy to see. I have no idea how much scripting is involved in the show. The interactions are still really genuine, so you can see a lot. It's great. I cried through the whole seventh season. So Queer Eye is the Netflix reboot of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, which originally premiered on Bravo in 2003. The Fab Five of the reboot are a different set of hosts than the original group. They are Anthony Porowski. Anthony is the expert on food and wine. Bobby Burke, an expert on interior design and home organization, although in one episode, he champions a barn build, so he's very versatile. Jonathan Van Ness is an expert on hair, personal hygiene, and makeup. Karamo Brown specializes in culture and lifestyle, and he's an expert on relationships and social interaction. And last but not least is Tan France, who is an expert on clothing, fashion, and personal styling. In each episode, the Fab Five focus on a hero who has been nominated to be on the show by their friends or their coworkers or their loved ones to get advice and a little bit of counseling and a makeover. So that's really the show in a nutshell. It's a makeover show, but it's full of acceptance and self-love. The hosts really focus on bringing out the best in everyone instead of trying to change who they are. Now, I'm a sucker for a makeover show, which is like hugely embarrassing now because human makeover shows are super cringy. And I am really a firm believer that everyone should be able to be who they want to be and express themselves how they feel comfortable expressing themselves. So mostly if I want to watch a makeover show, now I just watch a home renovation. But the way Queer Eye approaches their heroes is so lovely. I really did cry through every episode in the seventh season. I don't know how they approached issues with so many possible landmines and just breezed by each one with love and acceptance and kindness and encouragement. But they did. For instance, Anthony, the food expert, was respectful of each person's space with food, whether they had lots of experience in the kitchen or like literally none, and help them find the food and the prep that worked for them. One hero, and this wasn't, I don't think, in the seventh season. I think I binged a little bit farther. One hero had recently had a weight loss surgery. It wasn't gastric bypass. I think they said gastric sleeve, but anyway, the hero had some serious dietary restrictions due to his recent surgery. And Anthony made a delicious protein shake with him and focused on the fact that the hero needed nutrients to stay healthy, instead of focusing on his weight loss, which is just brilliant. I am a recovering anorexic, and partly as a result of the anorexia, I have severe dietary limitations. So I don't have a great relationship with really anything surrounding food. And I'm not alone. I'm just going to give you a couple of numbers from a quick Google search. 9% of the population of the United States has suffered or is currently suffering with an eating disorder. That is like almost 30 million people. in addition to that, 40% of adults of all sizes experience weight stigma or fat shaming. Needless to say, Americans' relationship with their weight and food is really complex. And Anthony could be opening up a whole can of worms when he takes each person into the kitchen, and I'm sure he knows it. But the way Anthony made space for each person, their relationship with food and cooking, it was really remarkable. Some of it is in his word choice, but much of it is in his manner. Anthony favors deceleration. It's not super acute deceleration, but when he speaks, you'll notice that a lot of his phrasing is like the vocal equivalent of landing a plane smoothly. And what just that little bit of deceleration does is brings a sense of calm into the interaction. It gives the heroes space to open up. So even though I have some food woes, I would have been completely comfortable laying everything on the table, pun intended, for him, and felt confident that he would have helped me make a bit of peace with my kitchen life. Jonathan Van Ness is the expert on hair and grooming and has really fascinating mannerisms. I don't remember which episode I talked about shaping. Actually, it was the Pacer episode that I just recently re-released that one. Oh my God, pull yourself together, Laurel. Jonathan does a lot of beautiful and dynamic shaping movements with their arms. That could be a whole episode in itself. You'll see Jonathan move through one-dimensional spoking, two-dimensional arcing, and three-dimensional carving, at least in every episode, if not in every frame. They also have a combination of effort preferences that makes really vibrant body language. I see a lot of strong weight, a lot of acceleration, and a lot of free flow. And that's very different from the other hosts, but it's also very important because it presents the whole spectrum of effort and space within the group of hosts. So when you have the whole effort spectrum, like out there, what it does is it sends the message that wherever the guest falls on that spectrum of movement preferences is okay. They're not alone. Does that make sense? It's like, okay, go with me here. If you were going to the playground for the first time and you weren't sure about this whole situation with the equipment, there's a slide that looks terrifying and monkey bars that you're not quite sure how to navigate and a swing that you will definitely fall off of, but you're at the playground and you have to pick something to use. If the playground is empty and you don't know how to use the equipment, that could be kind of scary and daunting. But if you have a friend at the slide and another at the monkey bars and another at the swings, well, that's a different story. Now the whole playground is open to you. You have a friend to walk you through each thing, to encourage you on the slide, to show you how to use the monkey bars, and to push you on the swing. The Fab Five and their effort lives are your friends on the playground. You have Anthony and Karamo on the monkey bars, Tan and Bobby on the slide, and Jonathan's over at the swings willing to show you how to use them and then give you a push. You can't appreciate the whole playground or feel accepted everywhere on the playground without someone at the swings. The playground is the spectrum of body language, and Jonathan is an integral part of making sure that everything is available to each of the heroes. Their body language and the fact that it is just a little bit different than the other hosts encourage the heroes towards accepting change and embracing a part of themselves that they may have forgotten about. Jonathan has really vibrant like personality and movement life, and you really need that vibrancy if you want to bring something back to life. It's like they're the defibrillator. So I mentioned earlier that I used to be a part of a conservative church and they didn't believe in women cutting their hair. I do cut my hair now, but I went for a long time without cutting it. I was literally taught that cutting my hair was part of the slippery slope to hell. So I didn't cut it for like 15 years and it was down to my knees and I kind of hated my life a little bit because my hair is thick and it was hot and it was heavy and it was in the way all the time. That's not part of my personal belief system now. I respect that many people believe that way. It's just not where I am anymore. But because cutting my hair used to be tied to my eternal damnation, For a long time, I was really anxious about cutting it, even when I went in for a little trim. What I didn't realize was that many, many people have strong feelings about their hair, not just Pentecostal women. Hair can be a highly emotional issue for many people and for many reasons. And every episode in his segment on grooming, Jonathan makes space for people to change. And it's actually a little bit pushy sometimes, but it's exactly when that person needs a platform to stand on. And Jonathan's push kind of gives them that platform. It's brilliant. Okay, let's talk about Tan for a bit. Tan, the fashion expert, especially in his word choices, also creates a lot of space for the heroes. He'll use phrases like, does this feel like the person you are now? Or how does this make you feel? Or what do you want to look like? Or this is my favorite. When was the last time you wore something that made you feel sexy? I so wish I could replicate his accent for you. It's just delicious. Tan doesn't do any shaming for current fashion choices. He uses the shopping moments to help teach the heroes about their bodies and the psychology behind their fashion choices. And he couples those teaching moments with affirmations. Like he told one of the heroes, look at those legs. Why aren't you showing those off? Everyone leaves their time with Tan feeling better about their bodies because he is so open. All of his interactions come from a place of affirmation. And you can see that there are a lot of heroes, they visibly lighten as they go from outfit to outfit with him. Bobby, the interior design expert, in one episode, this was so validating for me. In one episode, he said something to the effect of, for him, if there is chaos in his space, then there is chaos in his head. I identify with that so much. I cannot work in an unorganized or cluttered space. I can't even think in a cluttered space. Bobby's interaction is less directly personal than the other fabs, but it's just as meaningful, and it elicits just as much of a change in the hero's body language as the other hosts, which is really interesting. You can see it when people are introduced to their new spaces. There's sometimes shock, sometimes relief, joy, excitement. It's all just filtered a little bit more through the space. Design is Bobby's love language, and he's really fluent. So when the heroes see their new spaces, it has just as much of a physical effect on them as interacting with any of the other fabs. So I'm just going to talk about Karamo a bit, and then we'll get into specific interactions. The specific interactions are all in season 7, so you can go check them out if you want. Again, all on Netflix. Oh my God, how do I even get beyond Karamo's voice? The first thing, it's the first thing that strikes me literally every time he opens his mouth. He's so like calm and relaxing, and his voice is just beautiful. And then after I've like heard his voice, I always have to check out and see what his t-shirt says. He and I have the same t-shirt preferences. They're all like political statements. But getting onto his body language, focus, Laurel. He's very present. He's leaning in, he's focused, he's calm, and he's very even. He and Jonathan have opposite interaction styles. So where Jonathan is very vibrant and lively, Karamo is not really, he's not really reserved. He's more grounded, we'll say. And I think that because he's more grounded, Karamo can have really deep conversations about difficult subjects that, how do I want to say this? Okay. When I go to the therapist, she walks me through things I'm struggling with. And we have the benefit of a long-term relationship, so I don't have to get all the way through any process in the span of one session. Stay with me. Karamo has a limited amount of time to make a big impact, and he has mastered the art of calmly opening a door to change and supporting that person as they walk through. And then he makes sure that they have community and support for the whole journey, but he really only does the initiation. So what my therapist does with me over 2 months of sessions, Karamo inspires in the span of an episode and then sets up a support and like follow-up system. One of the things that makes his interactions with the heroes so successful is his calm demeanor. In one episode, he looks at one of the heroes and just says, just because something changes doesn't mean that it's gone. And the way he said it kind of took the hero from the tension that they were feeling about the change and calmed his voice down in the last half of the phrase and just brought them from a place of anxiety to a place of calmness. He demonstrated how this moment of change can actually land in a good place just in the intonation of his voice. Okay, so those are my observations about the Fab Five. They are all indeed fabulous. And I think, at least for me, the most remarkable thing is that their attitude and their body language and how they approach all the guests. It's what makes the interactions with the heroes so moving. So now let's chat about how their interactions change the body language of a couple of the heroes so that you'll have some examples in your pocket when you go binge all 7 seasons. I mean, come on, you're not going to start and then not finish. It's just, oh my God, it's so good. It's so good, you guys. Here we go. In episode 1, the Fab Five tackle a struggling frat house. There are lots of great moments, but I want to focus on Karamo's work with the group. Karamo brings all the boys out to like a beach and they build a campfire and they sit in a circle. It is clear from the group interactions that the members of the fraternity love each other like siblings. In fact, at one point, one of the Fabs says something to the effect of, "Aw, the Straits have chosen family too." And that made my heart melt a little. But okay. But Karamo's intent with the campfire was to give the boys an opportunity to support each other and to ask for help if they needed it. And to do that, he had to model it for them. Karamo says, quote, "Our society says, take care of everyone else, and that's what dictates your value. No one teaches you how to take care of yourself." And that's really the essence of his conversation with the boys. One of the boys' names is DeMario, and he really opens up during the group discussion. It's so beautiful. He starts talking about his financial difficulties, and you can see in his expression that he is really trying to control a little bit of how he's expressing himself, and he is losing the battle, which is actually really good. He needs support and he's in a safe place with people who will support him. So it's okay for him to be able to open up here. So as DeMario breaks down, Karamo says, "It should never get to the point where you break down. You just hold it all in. And one day the emotions, they just get the best of you and it explodes." This is so on point, speaking from personal experience. I don't love how I deal with how I'm feeling. And mostly because I'm historically bad at it, hence the therapy. But my default attitude is one of bottling things up, which is an expression of my preference for bound flow. Think about how much healthier it would be if I could let a little bit more free flow into my effort life and just release those emotions as they come in and not bottle them up. Because if I bottle them up, I have a breakdown every 2 years and I'm sobbing on the floor and it's not healthy. And that is what Karamo is showing the boys, how to be there for each other and support each other so they don't have to bottle everything up and then break down. Karamo does a really good job of looking at the boys' body language and identifying their bound flow and encouraging them to let it out. He references crossing the arms, but it's not, he's using it as a teaching tool. So the boys have a visual understanding of how the emotions are displayed. And you can tell he's really intuitive about reading people. By the end of their time on the beach, pretty much each one of the boys has cried a little. They've all expressed concern for their housemates. And there's even one boy who he says something to the effect of, "I don't know what I'm feeling, but I'm feeling something and I need to figure out what to do about it." And I just love that. That is a great place to be. You're at the beginning of a journey of self-discovery and you have no idea what it looks like, but you know you're going down that path to self-discovery. Okay. The next episode I want to talk about is about, it's called Superfan Steph, Steph was nominated by her girlfriend, Rachel. I want to highlight Jonathan and Tan here because the work they did with Steph really made a big difference in her body language. In the intro, Jonathan asks Steph, Are you feeling totally good about how you're looking? And Steph admits that she doesn't. And immediately, Jonathan makes her look in the mirror and do an affirmation. They say, I want you to look in the mirror and say, I accept myself completely. And Steph hesitates for a while and then breaks down a little bit. But Jonathan is insistent. They are not going to let Steph get out of the affirmation. And then they make her do 3 reps. I love it. But that's what I'm talking about when I say that Jonathan is like the platform people can push off of. He is the defibrillator because he has enough of a jolt to get other people going too. There's some strong weight there. There's some acceleration. There's some free flow, and it creates kind of a pushy attitude. And they pull that out exactly when the hero needs it. Jonathan isn't that way throughout the show. They're super flamboyant with a passion for dance and gymnastics and ice skating. And they can be really light and free. But when the hero needs a push, Jonathan has it. Okay, next. Steph previously said that she's avoided shopping like the plague and that she really wouldn't even know where to begin in dressing in a way that made her feel confident or good about herself. And Tan just says the most beautiful thing. He says, quote, I'm going to help you by putting you in clothes. It's the icing on the cake. The rest of the cake is you. Steph is a good one to watch the change in her movement and facial expression after Tan dresses her in the second outfit. She does not feel confident in the first, and you can see it. And Tan is super receptive to her feelings and then just walks her through picking out clothes and finding a look that she feels confident in. Then when you see her come out in the second outfit, she's visibly lifted. Tan says, I just want to buff the very best of you, not change you. And then Steph responds with, that means the world to me, in a place that continually wants to change who you are. And I think that is the essence of how the Fab Five kind of tackle the makeover in a really sensitive way. The next hero I want to highlight is Speedy. The Fab Five all get a big lift out of Speedy, but it manifests itself differently in his body. Speedy is in a wheelchair. He's paralyzed from the chest down after a car accident. I admit I feel totally stupid, but I didn't even put this together until they explained it on the show. When you're paralyzed from the chest down, you lose a lot of core strength. Again, something I should have just put together, but I didn't. In the episode, Karamo and Anthony bring in another hero from earlier on in the show. His name is Wesley, who is also in a wheelchair, and they all go to play basketball together. Wesley brings a brace for Speedy to wear that kind of straps his torso to the back of his chair to mimic core support, which is just, again, brilliant. There's so much brilliance in the show. I can't even handle it. Okay, so going back and looking at the episode again, Speedy's posture, again, because of his lack of core strength, is hunched over. But he's young, so a cursory judgment might lead someone to believe that he's disinterested, which is not the case, not the case at all. And if you look, you can see his interest in the rest of his body language. Look at his facial expressions. His face is the most expressive part of his body. Even his arm movement is a little bit subdued, so really hone in on those facial expressions. I super appreciate that Speedy is willing to put himself out there on his TikTok channel so that we can learn from him. He has a really unique body, really unique movement, and a very inspiring story. I really admire people who can recover after a tragedy and make their story into an inspiration for others. And I know that especially for Speedy, that requires putting himself out there and being really vulnerable. And I just applaud that so much. If you guys don't follow him on TikTok or Instagram, I will leave, like, I'll leave his handle in the comments so you can follow him. Amazing journey. Okay. In this episode, though, in Speedy's episode, Bobby really comes through. Speedy is living with his family and not in a space that is particularly accessible for him. So he talks with Bobby about his accessibility struggles, and Bobby creates this really thoughtful space for Speedy. Even though this isn't a typical interaction that we would think of as something to observe body language, I just want you to consider this. How we live in our bodies is a big part of how we communicate. And Speedy was in a space that was exhausting for him to navigate. Just it's hard to get around in an inaccessible space. That in and of itself influences how Speedy interacts with the people in his life. When Bobby created a space for him that was accessible, it allows Speedy to be more of who he is and less of who he has to be. He has more energy to do what he wants to do and express himself the way he wants to express himself because he's not expending so much energy navigating his space. This is a huge gift. So even though it isn't like a typical movement interaction, it changes Speedy's body language. Okay. The last thing I want to mention is Speedy's interaction with Antony in the kitchen. Antony asks Speedy if he cooks for himself and if he knows how to cook. And Speedy doesn't have a lot of experience cooking. He was in his car accident, I think when he was about 18, and he just didn't really have the opportunity to learn how to cook. He says his aunt cooks for him occasionally, but because Speedy doesn't have much experience in the kitchen and probably the kitchen that is available to him isn't particularly accessible, he just doesn't cook a lot. One of the things that Speedy is concerned about regarding food is his loss of appetite, which he says is common for people with spinal cord injuries. And you can see the wheels start turning in Antony's brain. He's like formulating ideas and he's thinking about how he can really have an impact for good. And then Speedy asks Antony if he can teach him how to make steak and rice. And Antony says something to the effect of, I will teach you to make anything you want. And the way Speedy lights up is absolutely priceless. They have a great time in the kitchen and they make steak and rice, but Antony focuses a bit on health and how Speedy can integrate this dish into his life to stay strong and to build muscle and to take care of himself. I just love the way this interaction goes because you can really see Speedy accept the information that Antony is giving him. Again, just a beautiful interaction. I highly recommend you watch the whole season. After I finished season 7, Netflix took me right to season 6 and then season 5. And now I'm on season 4. I am like, I'm all in. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did and can really start to see some of the specifics of the interactions I was talking about when you watch it. Thanks so much for listening today. This episode took longer to get out into the world than I wanted, and I really, really appreciate your patience. Hope you're having a great week. Bye, friends.